Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Dolores King-Williams, Dylan Lynch, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, Tim Carlin, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Andy Clements, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Johan Detweiler, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands number 35, Bitter Fruit. Ryan Cotter squinted tightly against the blazing desert sun, hanging like a cancerous boil over White Sands, New Mexico, and wondered what had set his nervous system to jangling a silent alarm. Without checking his wrist chron, he knew he hadn't been outside the installation much more than 10 or 15 minutes. It was still early afternoon, with much of the day left before him and his group for the wreck they'd planned. The one-eyed warrior paid attention to the warning. Survival in Deathlands depended on a man developing senses that were exceptionally sharp, then having the intelligence to listen when they said something was wrong. He carried his Steyr SSG-70 rifle at the ready as he jogged up one of the sharper inclines surrounding the installation area. His boots sank through the shifting sand, almost as if they were being sucked down. He dropped to one knee and surveyed the sandy sea spread out around him.
Something up?
J.B. Dix joined Ryan. They traveled together for a long time, blooded by the years they'd spent with the traitor in the War Wags, and bound by mutual respect. Ryan Cotter was a big man, leaned out by harsh living and staying on the move, but packing muscle that still pushed him over 200 pounds. A scuffed black leather patch covered the hollow where his left eye had been, and beads of perspiration had cut a path across his forehead, following the strap. A scar gouged his face from the corner of his right eye to below his mouth, looking waxy in the harsh gleam of the unforgiving sun.
I got an itch.
Damned uncomfortable thing, one of those itches.
You?
Yeah. Same feeling.
Anything?
No. But I got an idea somebody's eyeballing us.
Ryan glanced in the armorer's direction. JB was a short, wiry man. His steel-rimmed glasses sparked in the sun beneath a battered fedora he wore. His brown shirt and gray pants were stained from long days and hard use. The tops of his high combat boots were barely visible in the powdery sand.
Maybe we should keep moving.
I reckon so.
Give me some cover. I'll go down and take a look. If somebody wants in this place, they're gonna have to cross us first.
That's what I was thinking.
Ryan picked up the Steyr and rose to a crouch. The safety was already off. He started down, staying as much within cover as he could. After the business in South Dakota that landed them in Siberia, Ryan and his group had made a Matrans jump to Dulce, New Mexico. They'd taken a couple of days of downtime to recover from the wear and tear of the last jump, deciding to explore the area on foot, as the wags they'd discovered in the redoubt wouldn't start. The journey to White Sands had been relatively quiet. The local muti bands had been dying slowly from the radiation sickness they'd gotten from living in the area. The survivors worshipped a god they believed lived in the sands of fire and were bound by arcane ritual to the very thing that made each generation more mutated than the last. The sustained exposure to radiation ensured none of them would live long. Ryan paused beside a Hummer. Its olive-drab color faded over the decades to a sickly greenish-gray. Military markings adorned the sides. Only the left rear corner protruded through the tide of sand that had washed over it. A rusted steel rod held the tattered remains of a small United States flag. Three other vehicles were partially visible in the mounds of sand that had washed in over the installation. All of them were unrecoverable. Until Jack Lauren had scouted out a hidden entrance to the underground installation, the trip had looked as if it were going to end up as nothing more than wasted effort and needless risk. The albino teenager, Christy Roth, Doc Tanner, and Mildred Wyeth were all engaged in scouring through the honeycomb of tunnels and rooms they'd found below. Ryan and JB had already rotated out for a respite from the heat and the dust in the underground installation, which bordered on life-threatening. Suddenly, a trio of muties erupted from the sand, leaving the shallow troughs they'd evidently dug to spring their trap. Fire blast! Sand covered the creatures' bodies, tracking into the crevices of the open sores that covered most of their skin.
Secret ground, Outlander! Now you die!
The mutie's upper lip had gone missing to radiation burns. The few teeth that remained were black and filed to sharp edges, no longer seated securely in the diseased gums. The mutie carried a homemade knife, fashioned by tying a keen-edged wedge of nuked silicon to a long screwdriver. Firing the Steyr would alert other muties in the area. Instead, Ryan brought up the rifle's butt in a sharp arc. The mutie's skull exploded in a vivid spray of blood and brains. The other two muties threw themselves at Ryan. One held an axe, the other a knife. Ryan went down backward in the sand. Ryan dodged a knife strike that missed his head by inches. He caught the second mutie's wrist. The keen edge of the camp axe halted, only inches from his face. The air over the shoulders of the two muties seemed to ripple, as though a mirage had considered forming there, but had suddenly chosen not to. And the itch of warning that had been spreading across Ryan's shoulders became a definite burn. The stinking smoke given off by the oilcloth torch had triggered a headache that had been pounding at Christy's temples for almost an hour. Her companion, Doc Tanner, carried a torch like hers, adding to the wreath of smoke that followed them as they worked their way through the underground corridors of the White Sands military installation.
Doc?
Yes, Christy?
Let's check out this room, then get out of here for a while.
As you wish, my dear.
Christy pressed on, fully alert, paying particular attention to the extra senses given her by the mutie strain that was linked with her own DNA. Her hair was coiled tight against her scalp, feeling like another layer of skin, only more sensitive to the shifting breezes inside the corridor. Of the group, only she and Doc hadn't rotated out topside since entering the complex, and she was sick of dust and dark. She lifted the torch higher until the apex of the yellow and white flame nearly kissed the metal ceiling. She was an inch short of 6 feet and carried 150 pounds in whipcord curves. Her hair was flame red and sentient, responding to her emotions and mood swings, further evidence of her mutie heritage. Even by the light of the torches, her eyes were cut emeralds that gleamed liquidly. Home for Christy before she'd met Ryan Cotter and started traveling with him across Deathlands had been a ville called Harmony. Her mother, Sonia, had taught her ways of calling upon and listening to the force of Gaia, the Earth Mother, making Christy part of her family's mystic heritage. For years, Christy had thought her mother dead, but lately, there had been reports suggesting that wasn't true. It was all confusing to Christy, and it raised questions and some anger she had no way of venting. She tightened the grip on her Smith & Wesson Model 640 38 caliber pistol when the corridor they were following abruptly ended. Christy moved her torch forward to better see the door before her. It was heavy steel, set flush with the frame, and it would take some real effort to pry it open if it was locked.
Shall I lead the way, Christy?
No, I'll take it.
By some counts, Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner was nearly 2.5 centuries old. He was tall and skinny, built like a leaned-out stork. He was the first success logged by Operation Kronos in the pre-dark days. Operation Kronos had been part of the Totality concept, which was developed to explore arcane and esoteric means of future warfare. The focus of Operation Kronos had been time trawling, moving things and individuals through the time stream. Doc was the only human to ever make the trip in one piece, though what it did to his sanity was questionable. He'd been ripped from his family, whom he'd adored, and left stranded in a world he had no way of understanding. Doc had been welcomed to Operation Kronos department heads for only a short time. As a success, he was meant to be cherished. All Doc had wanted to do was get back home.